Every day we're bombarded by facts. Dates, names, places are hosed on us from the newspaper, the television, the internet, and the radio. Those of us concerned with world events absorb what we can and try to make sense of it all, but too often the real world that journalists try to describe is too cluttered and messy to make sense. Sometimes it takes an artist to rearrange the chaos into narrative and provide the criminals and victims and cops and politicians we hear about with context and character, with souls. This summer, we're inviting writers of fiction to help us see some of the issues we cover through their eyes, and we begin with the immigrant experience. In her latest novel, Edwige Danticat writes about a Haitian immigrant in New York. First-time novelist Nina Marie Martinez populates a town beneath a volcano on the California side of the border. And British-born Jonathan Raven writes about a Chinese immigrant and a transplanted European in his adopted hometown, Seattle. Later in the program, fiction arranged for however much time you've got, stories for planes and waiting rooms and elevators, but first, the writer's view of the immigrant experience. If you're a new arrival or fifth generation, what novel describes your immigrant experience? Join the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And our first guest is Edwige Danticat, the author of Crick, Crack, and The Farming of the Bones. Her most recent novel is called The Dewbreaker, and she joins us now from her home in Miami, Florida. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, do you think fiction can get to truths that sometimes journalism or even history can't?
Absolutely. I think in many ways fiction can tell lies to get at a greater truth, and it allows you to make that leap. I mean, and that's what sometimes, you know, people are talk about compassion deficit and making that leap to imagine yourself in somebody else's place. And fiction offers that nuance. It offers us the ability to do that.
Your most recent novel asked us to look into the soul of a man who's had an uncomfortable past, a man who was a tonton macoute in Haiti, a torturer. The Dewbreaker means...
Well, The Dewbreaker is my very liberal translation of an Creole expression, Chouquette La Osée. And Chouquette La Osée was a person who was a section chief who was really judge and jury executioner in a rural area where he was from. And this character was working in the city but got that title because he was such a brutal torturer in the barracks where he works. And the book takes him from Haiti in the 1960s. To his current life in New York, where he's actually a very peaceful man reviewing his past and who's being really circled by his victims and the neighborhood where he lived in Brooklyn.
He also has a daughter who loves him dearly. And you, there's this wonderful passage you have. I'm just going to read it for you. I had always thought that my father's only ordeal was that he'd left his country and moved to a place where everything from the climate to the language was so unlike his own, a place where he never seemed quite to fit in, never appeared to belong. The only thing I can grasp now as I drive way beyond the speed limit down yet another highway is why the unfamiliar might have been so comforting rather than distressing to my father.
Mm-hmm.
That's a wonderful... It turns that whole idea we have about the immigrant experience right on its head.
Well, because I think often people think that, you know, they're once you make it, once you leave the place where you are going, fleeing different things, and once you arrive in this new place, in this case in the United States, that your life is all right, that it's great. But we're actually, the immigrant experience has a series of rebirths, and that with each moment, with each obstacle, you know, this person is redefined and sees themselves in a different way. And sometimes there are people for whom that it offers this opportunity to finally be anonymous, to finally disappear. And so I think there are many phases to that experience, but also there are many faces to it. There are many reasons that it's that some people might suddenly want community, but some people might want to be as far away as possible from community.
You were born in Haiti, came to the United States in 1981. What, you were 12 years old?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How did your experiences as a you know, girl immigrant, how did they inform your fiction?
Well, I think, you know, for all writers, the personal experience for me was definitely the seed. And I found myself coming to the United States at a very interesting time in 1981, where you had two different things going. You had the first big wave of people coming to the United States by boat in Miami, where I now live. And in New York and other cities, you know, you had the experience of people first talking about AIDS and linking, you know, Haitians were the first, really the only group that was identified as a high-risk group by nationality. So it was a very difficult time, but very, in some ways, a kind of great seed for fiction, you know, all the struggles that people were going through at different phases in their migration, watching that very up close. And of course, what people who come to the United States from another language experience when you're a child is having to interpret that culture, not just for yourself, but for the adults around you who are just sinking in at the same time. So all that was very fertile ground for fiction and definitely an interesting bit of that observation for a fiction writer.
You learned your English from Sesame Street.
From Sesame Street, from Mr. Rogers, and from my brothers who were U.S. born, and our parents would insist that they speak to us in English, even though we all spoke to one another in Creole, but from them as well.
Your family spoke in Creole. You learned English. You went to school, obviously, in English. Why did you end up writing, do you think, in your second language?
Well, I think, and in that experience, what also makes this conversation so interesting is that there's so many of us like this, and not just from Haiti or from the part of the world that I come from, but from many other places. From, you know, you have Juno Diaz from the Dominican Republic and many other people who come to the United States as children. And I think at the time that I came here was sort of when my creativity was emerging, at this time that I encountered this language, and it became the language that I write in. It's not a calculated choice, as some people think, but it becomes a language of creation for many of us because it meets us at this moment. It's sort of like we migrate to this language, but it also migrates to us.
Joseph Conrad wrote in English.
Yes, and Samuel Beckett and others. And language, you know, as a wonderful Haitian anthropologist, Jean Price Marr says, language is a tool, and better to write in the language that you feel is a better tool for you than to force yourself to write in others that you don't think you can. And I don't think many of us are given that choice when you come from another country at that time, at the age that we come from. And it's not necessarily a loss, because I think the more languages you know, the better. And whatever seems to, in whatever language your creativity flourishes, you know, all the better for you.
Almost all of us come from somewhere else. We all came to America at one point or another, Native Americans excepted, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But we're asking listeners to call in with nominations for the novels, the fiction that they feel best describes their immigrant experience, whenever that may have been. Our number, if you'd like to join us, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's take a call from Dave, who joins us on the line from Jacksonville, Florida.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Dave.
For having me on the show.
Appreciate it.
I have, since my ancestry traces back to the Mayflower, I guess there are two novels that would be an accurate reflection of my family's immigration experience. First, of course, would be Pilgrim's Progress. But my mother wrote a novel called Two Paths in the Wilderness about two young people encounter during the King Philip War.
King Philip's War was an Indian war.
It was a war between the colonists and the Wampanoag and Narragansett and Nipmuc tribes.
Going way, way back.
Yeah, in the 1600s.
And how does it come out?
Well, for that, I'd recommend that you read the book. But
you're not only her son, but her agent.
Well, you know, we got to take care of our families now, don't we?
I guess we all do. Can you tell us anything about it, though, Dave?
It describes it's kind of a coming-of-age story. It's based on two young people in, one is a colonist, and another is a young Wampanoag tribesman. And it describes the violent encounters that took place during the war. Ultimately, the description is such that everything comes out as well as it could under the circumstances. Mm-hmm. But if you know anything about that period in our history, it was one of the bloodiest wars that ever took place on the North American continent.
Certainly in terms of the percentage of the population involved, yeah.
Yes, it was horrible. It decimated both the colonist and the Native American populations.
Well, Dave, thanks very much for the nominations. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Edwidge Dantycott, I meant to ask you, when you were growing up and reading more and more in whatever language, were there novels that you thought represented, you learned about the immigrant experience from?
Well, the very first novel that I read, and in part with the dictionary, was Paul Marshall's Brown Girl, Brown Stone. And it's an extraordinary book in that it talks about, it's a first-generation woman, and her family's from Barbados, and really talks about their struggle, the father's struggle to keep a piece of land that he has in Barbados, and the mother's desire, you know, very almost urgent to buy a brownstone. And what plays out in the story is this dedication to this dream, but the models, and that these new immigrants, you know, they came in, the story set in 1939, and it goes through World War II, but and the parents, you know, the mother works in a war plant, but her dream is to follow, you know, to do as the Irish did and the Dutch did and the English did, who came and tried to remodel that experience on their own. So it's a very powerful novel that I've read many times over the years. But when I remember when I first read it, you know, as a girl, just something that spoke so strongly, because it was the first time I saw in a book and always some of what was happening around me, people who work in factories who are really struggling to fulfill a dream, and to see that, you know, to see the reflection of sort of what's happening in your surroundings in a book was just the most extraordinary feeling for me.
Let's take another caller. This is Navneet. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, that is correct.
And you're calling from Sunnyvale, California. Go ahead.
Yes, I would like to recommend the book The Namesake by Jhumpa Lahiri.
Mm-hmm.
She writes a lot about the Indian immigration experience, actually, but it's about a little earlier age in the 70s when they came to a small town in Massachusetts. It's not the same for me because I came to New York in 99, and it was a lot different, but I could relate to a lot of stuff she wrote about missing India and the foods, though in New York has actually almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, like, touching, and you when you read the book, you're like, oh, my God, that's how I was, and now it's changed. So it's a pretty good book.
Edwidge Dantycott, that's the miracle, isn't it? We can see ourselves in all of these different people.
Oh, absolutely, and especially when you're young and you're coming, you're everything is new in a culture, and then you to read that is so strong. And I'm a huge Jhumpa Lahiri fan myself, and love the interpretive maladies for the same reasons. I mean, and it's also incredible that there are so many threads across cultures. You know, if you read Amy Tan, The Joy Luck Club, and even if you come from Haiti, even if you come from another part of the world, you can still identify with that experience. I mean, that's the joy of reading itself. You know, that's the power of it, that sometimes you know people in books better than you know people in your own life.
Navneet, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And Edwidge Dantycott, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Edwidge Dantycott, the author most recently of The Dewbreaker, and she joined us from her home in Miami, Florida. We're talking about exploring the immigrant experience through fiction. When we come back, we'll talk with first-time novelist Nina Marie Martinez about the Calmex culture, and then later with author Jonathan Raban about the European in America. We're taking your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address, totn@npr.org. What novel or work of fiction has helped you better understand your immigrant experience? I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Fiction can sometimes inform us in a way that plain facts cannot. Today we're talking with novelists to explore the immigrant experience. What novel turned your immigrant experience into art? You're invited to join us. Call 800-989-8255 or email us, TOTN@npr.org. From Haitians in New York to the Mexicali way, Nina Marie Martinez joins us now from the studios of member station KAZU in Pacific Grove, California. Her new novel is called Carumba, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you for having me.
Unlike Edwige, who is an immigrant herself, you're a person of mixed ethnicity, but you chose to write a novel about the Mexican immigrant experience. What about that inspired you?
Well, you know, I grew up in an English-only household. When I was 14 years old, my parents split up. My mother is an American of German descent. My father's a first-generation Mexican-American. So when my parents split up, my father went back to his culture, and I sort of stood back and felt kind of left out. I didn't learn to speak Spanish until I was in my 20s, and I did it by selling at the swap meets. And there I learned to speak a very authentic Mexican Spanish at the hands of Mexican nationals, Mexicanos, who were also, you know, doing the same job. And I learned more than just a language. I think I learned a lot about the culture. So when I sat down to write Carumba, that's really what I wrote about.
Your novel has been described by some critics as witty, delightful, even fun. Not the usual image we have of the Mexican immigrant experience.
I think one person wrote that a lot of people in my novel are poor but not struggling. And what I wanted to capture in Carumba was the joy and the fun and also the hard work that immigrants have to experience while they're here.
Your book also, it's a story told in the form of loteria cards, and there's some wonderful artwork in the book at the start of each chapter that imitate these Mexican loteria cards. Tell us a little bit about them.
Well, they're the traditional loteria cards, and loteria is basically Mexican bingo, except it comes with an image with each card and a wise saying. And one of the things that I tried to do with the book was update these images while maintaining the tradition. And one of the cards that I chose to create was the calling card, because for so many immigrants, that's their connection to Mexico. And I'm speaking mostly about Mexican immigrants here in California. If you want to call home and speak with your family, you do it by having a tarjeta telefónica, a calling card.
Let's get a caller on the line, and Lisa joins us from Corn Creek, Nevada.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I would
hi.
So much like to recommend Maxine Hong Kingston's book, The Woman Warrior. She has this wonderful scene, well, many wonderful scenes, but one scene in particular where the child comes home from school to her immigrant mother. In fact, the child herself was born in China. And she says, "Mom, Mom, Mom, I got all A's in school." And the mother, instead of being impressed, says, "Let me tell you about a child in China who saved her village from bandits." And the child says to herself, "Oh, I can't impress my mother at all because there's no bandits here where I live. What is the equivalent? What can I do to impress my mother? And there's nothing." And myself, as a child on one side of a Holocaust victim, I found it was very hard to impress my father with anything I could do, given that what he had lived through as a teenager in the Holocaust. So I felt very well represented by somebody writing from an entirely different background who had yet experienced the same thing as I had.
It's interesting. We have an email on kind of the same subject from Mona. As the daughter of a Chinese immigrant, I found it difficult to find novels I could relate to until I read Amy Tan's The Joy Luck Club. After that novel, I started reading other novels about being raised American by immigrant parents. I found that we have much in common, regardless of race or country of origin.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
Have you found that?
And I think,
go ahead, Nina.
I'm sorry. I think a lot of times if you're the daughter, or in my case, even the granddaughter of immigrants, you're an insider and an outsider. You hear the stories from your parents, because the older generation is always more than willing to share its struggles with the younger generation. You know how the stories begin. Oh, well, you think you had it bad. When we were a kid, you know, we had to deal with this, that, and the other thing.
2 miles through the snow and we liked it, yes.
We hear the stories, yet we observe the culture with a more keen eye because in a way it's foreign to us.
Lisa, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Artemis, and Artemis is on the line with us from Manhattan in New York.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm calling to recommend a book called Facing Athens by George Sarah-Nicolaou, and it's actually about a native Athenian who immigrates to America, and then he goes back to Athens after being here from the age of 9 through 30-something and sees Greece and Athens through, well, strips it of its stereotypes and sees the city straining under passions and burdens of the modern life. And what's interesting about it is being able to go back and seeing his native city after having lived in New York and talking about his experiences, and there are retrospective paragraphs which really are very telling about what it was like to come here at a very young age. And also very good in the sense that the Olympics are coming, and it's a very rare view of Athens, and was recently reviewed very well by the New York Times as well.
So this is a new book about Athens today.
Yes, but through the eyes of an immigrant. And I think that's what makes it very different. It's not just about the immigrant experience, but what it's like to go back and see the place that you were born and raised up until 9 after you have left.
That's an interesting, raises an interesting, thanks very much for the call, Artemis.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
It. But you bring up an interesting point about, of course, we're told you can never go home again, Nina Marie Martinez. Of course, the Mexican immigrant experience is, of course, you can go home again and again and again.
But it's hard to come back if you need to be here to work, and if you're undocumented, you face a border crossing that, you know, a lot of people lose their lives trying to cross that border.
Yet it is different in the sense that immigrants from Europe in the old days or, you know, a lot of places today, once they come here, it's very difficult for them to go back. Well, these days, of course, you can just get on an airplane and go back.
That's very true. Mm.
Well, Nina Marie Martinez, thanks very much for being with us, and good luck with your book.
Okay, great. Thanks for having me.
Nina Marie Martinez, her book is called Caramba. She was with us from the studios of member station KAZU in Pacific Grove, California. Well, not all immigrants are created equal. Tom Janeway, the Hungarian-born British protagonist, clings to his position of European superiority over his adopted land in Jonathan Raban's new novel, Wax Wings. The author joins us now from member station KUOW in Seattle, Washington. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Do you think it's different for an English-speaking European than for other nationalities to be immigrants in America?
Yes. In fact, Wax Wings really has two protagonists, though I know that's technically not possible. I think a protagonist has to be a single character. But there are really the yin and yang in the book of the English, Hungarian-born Englishman, Tom Janeway, on the one side, and then his alter ego, who's a Chinese immigrant called Chick. And really, to understand the one, you have to see to see the other. And it's Chick, you know, who is a classic immigrant who comes on inside a container after a horrible crossing across the Pacific and lands up in Seattle, desperate to become an American. And it's against that sense of the immigrant's yearning to melt into the society that Tom Janeway, who comes to this country, as so many Englishmen do, rather with that sense that America was put on as a kind of lurid comic entertainment to amuse the English visitor. And there's a whole tradition of that, you know, in English writing, from Fanny Trollope and Domestic Manners of the American People to Dickens in American Notes to Evelyn Waugh's The Loved One and Kingsley Amis's One Fat Englishman. There's this whole tradition of English writing about America, which takes this rather sort of superior, wry view. And Tom Janeway is, in fact, a regular commentator for NPR's All Things Considered. And he writes these sort of self-consciously, wry, through the wrong end of a telescope, kind of little 4-5 minute pieces about American life, putting on a slightly exotic accent every time he goes on the radio. Because he's Hungarian-born, he has this rolled R, which people hear whenever he's broadcasting. And he's one of those exotic, European-accented NPR commentators, of whom there are several. Tom is one of them. And in a sense, every time he observes America, he exaggerates the degree to which he comes from the old world. In looking at the new, he always keeps on seeing America through the lens of English literature. Not like me, I hasten to say, at all. But that's his way of doing it. And in a way, it's a determined standing back from American culture that gives him his voice within the United States.
Well, obviously, you have some things in common with this otherwise, utterly alien personality. How has your experience informed your fiction?
I came to America as a transplant, not an immigrant. I don't think anybody who comes speaking English, you know, from Australia or New Zealand or where I come from, England, can claim to be an immigrant. To be an immigrant, you have to lose your language, lose your occupation, become nobody before you start becoming an American. And English people don't have to do that. So I'm really just a transplant. But I'm a transplant who's, after living in this country for 14 years, I'm still made aware that I am a stranger here several times a day. It's small things. It's, you know, you're in a supermarket checkout line and maybe your accent gives you away or you use some slight Briticism which meets with a sort of raised eyebrow from the cashier. I'm never not aware that I am a slight stranger in this country. And I think that's not actually a bad thing for a writer. It keeps one alert to the culture that one's living in, keeps one observing it. And I rather, you know, I am technically a resident alien. And that's rather how I think of myself as I live in the United States. I'm a resident alien here. And so is Tom. And that sense of, you know, being, you know, having a full life in this country and yet never being completely part of it, completely at home in it. Certainly, I mean, it's my experience and it's also his.
Let's get a caller on the line. Phyllis is with us from Overland Park in Kansas.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wanting to recommend, I was identifying with what the author was talking about. My favorite immigrant novel is Call It Sleep by Henry Roth, and it talks about Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe on the Lower East Side. And the protagonist is a little boy named Davy, and the way he describes the neighborhood, and here I am in Overland Park, Kansas, okay?
Long way away from New York.
You can probably tell that I'm a fish out of water here. Every time I open my mouth, somebody says, oh, you're from back east. And, you know, I have visions of China or something, because to me that's east, you know. In any case, there's one scene in the book that I remember vividly. He's under the subway tracks, the elevated part of the subway, and the sparks come floating down. When a subway train goes around the corner, sparks fly, and by the time they reach you, they don't hurt you. But it's very scary. I remember being scared when I was a little girl. We lived right near the IRT, and it took a really mean turn where we lived. In the summertime, when the windows were open, you could hear that screeching as they went. Anyway.
Phyllis, with any luck, they'll extend the number one train to run all the way to Overland Park, Kansas pretty soon.
Anyway, my daughter moved back there. So, you know, everything that goes around. But my parents were immigrants. And when I read call it sleep, I was identifying a lot with the experience that the family had. The only thing that was not the same was the mom was speaking very elegantly about her European settle or whatever, and my mother never spoke that way about where she came from. The only thing she ever said was, I'll never go back there, and I hope they all drop dead. So, you know.
Angela, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Can I jump in?
I do need to say that you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And now, Jonathan Raven, you can jump in.
Sorry.
That's all right. I
just wanted to endorse what Angela, was it the last caller?
Yes.
Said about Call It Sleep, which seems to me the great immigrant novel, certainly of the last century. And one of the things that Henry Roth in that novel does, fascinatingly, is he has two languages going. The language spoken inside the house of these immigrants, particularly around the kitchen table, shortly after their arrival in New York, is it's supposed to be Yiddish, but Henry Roth renders Yiddish conversation in wonderfully eloquent Shakespearean 17th century English. And then they move outside of the house. The moment the door opens, they have to live in this whole other language of the New York streets, which is broken, often obscene English, with people having tremendous difficulty in managing to make themselves understood or to understand others. And this play of two languages, the language inside the heads of the characters, and then the language they have to use to negotiate the American street. It makes for a wonderful tension in the book. I think it's a very great novel indeed.
Emailer Tony Rutt in Portland, Oregon, begs to differ. He writes, surely no book better captures an immigrant's view of America than that written by the immigrant Nabokov. His descriptions of Hubert Humbert and Lolita's travels across America remain unparalleled in American immigrant fiction.
I think I'd endorse that, too.
Well, two recommendations there from Jonathan Raven. His new novel is Waxwings. If you go back a few years, many of us could profit by rereading his book on Arabia, a nonfiction book from some years ago. But Jonathan Raven, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Jonathan Raven joined us from the studios of member station KUOW in Seattle, Washington. When we come back from a short break, we're going to talk about when and where we read with the editor and contributors to a new anthology, the Paris Review book for Planes, Trains, Elevators, and Waiting Rooms. So where do you snatch those few minutes every day where you can actually get into a book of fiction or nonfiction for that matter and take yourself away from the world in which we find ourselves all too often? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address, TOTN@NPR.org. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.